His hands and feet were bound with strips of cloth, and his face wrapped in cloth. Jesus said to them, "Unbind him and let him go." Many of the Jews, therefore, who had come with Mary, had seen what Jesus did, believed in him. The Gospel of our Lord.
Again, Betty, I really enjoyed the way you read that, especially the part when Jesus says, "Lazarus, come out." My own personal version of that moment in the story is, you are surrounded. Come out with your hands up. Some of us can relate to that probably a little bit better. So this again, long story in a line of long stories that began in early Lent with Nicodemus, then moved on to the Samaritan woman at the well, then the blind guy arguing with the Pharisees, and now finally Lazarus. And don't forget Martha and Mary right at the beginning of the story, where the author tells us, oh, by the way, Mary's the one that anointed Jesus. She's the one that figured out what's coming, what's going on here. So, in order to understand this scene and the raising of Lazarus, which is the moment in John's Gospel that gets the attention of the imperial powers. I mean, you know, all of a sudden word gets out, hey, this guy's raising the dead. We have a problem because he's not playing by the rules, right? Isolated and left sort of standalone story, most of us have been told or taught that this story has to do with raising the dead like bringing Elvis back. And that the heart of the story is really about avoiding hell and getting into heaven by believing in Jesus. And it really, that particular approach to the story misses the whole point of the story, and it really misses the flow of the gospel according to John, because what's really going on, not just in this story, but in all of the stories, starting with Nicodemus and the Samaritan woman at the well and the blind man and Mary and Martha, all of them in conversation with Jesus are being returned from exile. And we're going to be talking about this a little more. And, as we've discussed, restored not only to relationship, but invited into a partnership with Jesus and with God. Remember when we were talking about the Samaritan woman, and we were kind of joking where she says, hey, Jewish boy with no bucket. And he says, hey, Samaritan lady with five husbands, right? Well, this particular story could be Jesus saying, hey, stinky boy with no clothes, to Lazarus, right? I mean, again, this is about being returned from exile. All of these people have been living in exile in one form or another, and they're being returned. And so, one of the ways we can approach this story, as well as all of the stories in the Gospel according to John, is a template that's used among people in the recovery community. What we were like, what happened, and what it's like now. We'll come back to that. But first, we have, as I mentioned earlier, our special speaker today, Dr. Deb Cash. Deb?
Good morning. I'm Deb Cash. I think I know most everyone. I work with the most wonderful people in the world who are caregivers, as well as you all. I have another name, too. Don't I, Brian? Dr. Dead Cats. I also work with people who have advanced, people who are in the advanced stages of Alzheimer's disease. And you don't argue with somebody when they call you dead cats. You just... The new word now is memory issues. I think we all feel like we have memory issues. Where's our keys? Why did I walk into this room? And my story is not as great as Lazarus and Ezekiel, but it's great and close to me. In 2009, I believe that's when I began to understand and know the community of St. Peter's. I was new here, and I also was on my fourth relative to be a caregiver. He was in advanced stages of diabetes. He was a double amputee. He was blind and was in stages of dementia, but I'll say memory issues. He had memory issues. Anyway, I went to Father Jeff and I said, could I start a caregiver group for general people, for general caregivers? And he said, well, let's ask the vestry, and we both went, and I got such encouragement. It was wonderful, and I'm not sure everybody knew how desperate caregivers were at that time. There wasn't a lot of public information about that. So I'm really proud of Father Jeff and the vestry at that time. I was also recovering from surgery from removing a brain tumor. So here I was starting this group, this caregiver group, thinking, okay, brain tumor girl, what are you going to do now? And I knew as a caregiver I needed resources and I knew I needed support. And so it worked out. And what really worked and what was really a blessing was when our deacon, Betty Bianchi, joined our group as the medical consultant as well as the spiritual advisor. And she did that for me, and I so appreciate it because we all have self-doubt. And my background is that I'm not culturally Episcopal. I'm Cherokee, and I would say, are you, Betty, how can I be Episcopalian? And she said, how can you not? The people here are just like you. They work to serve the Lord in their own way, and they are who they are, and they care. So that helped me a lot. And I do see goodness here in how you're all passionate about service to others. And I do love that. And I have to do two shout-outs. One is, because I'm not sure you know about these things, Pat Frederick Perona was so wonderful. Last Christmas, I asked her if she might have some prayer shawls for the Arbor's Memory Care Facility up in Reno. These people have advanced stages of dementia and Alzheimer's. Forget the memory issues. This is very advanced. And she and the ladies from the Methodist Church, the prayer shawl knitters, all met up with me, and we carpooled up there. They brought 40 prayer shawls, about 10 twiddle muffs, and it was magical. It was just amazing because we went in, and there was one type of energy, which was very different. And as I saw these women just wrapping everyone in a prayer shawl and having them pick out colors, it just transformed the whole group. And there was one little episode that I looked at and I thought, wow, this is very, very close to God. There was a small woman who was carrying a naked baby doll, and she was off in the corner and not involved at all. And we wrapped up her baby doll, swaddled the baby in a pink prayer shawl, and that woman just changed. It was just amazing. And I like the quote by Mother Teresa that says, we can do no great things, but we can do small things with great love. And that's what you all do. And I'm going to embarrass now Lloyd Mack, because he took the training, the respite education support training, which is a standardized training to help everyone, to help the caregivers, but mostly to help care partners. And once he took that, he said, what should I do? And he goes to the Carson Plaza and visits a veteran with memory issues, and he brings Benton, his English bulldog, and he and Benton are rock stars at the Carson Plaza. They love them. So those are those small acts of love that mean so much. And I guess I just want to say thank you. It's an honor to be part of the caring and kind community at St. Peter's.
Thank you so much. I shared with the 8 o'clockers that while Deb was sharing, I came up with a new subtitle for our website that says St. Peter's Episcopal Church with Dr. Dead Katz. If she can be an Episcopal, so can you. As a subtitle, I think it'll play. So Deb, thank you so much. And what Deb was describing in terms of the work of caregivers, the moment of the group taking the prayer shawls, that's what all these stories are about. I mean, those of us who can relate to any of the characters in John's Gospel, be it, again, Nicodemus, or the Samaritan woman at the well, or the blind man, or Lazarus, you know, living in exile and now return to exile, and add to that the image of the woman at the care center with the naked baby doll who comes alive when her baby is swaddled in a prayer shawl. I mean, all of the amazing ways that we are returned from exile and reconnected in order to partner with ourselves, each other, God, and ultimately all of creation. That's what's going on in this story of Lazarus. And so there are lots of different ways to understand the experience of exile. I mean, there are millions of people now on the earth that are living in exile from their homelands, refugees, immigrants. I mean, we have example after example of that. There are folks now in our culture and in our country living in what you might think of as a form of spiritual exile. They can no longer buy into the old message of Christianity in the West that says, you have to avoid hell and get into heaven, and raising the dead is all about that, bringing Elvis back from the dead. You know, it's a message that just doesn't make any sense to people anymore, and yet no alternative has been offered them. And by the way, if you're really committed, though, to the idea of Christianity being a way to avoid hell and get into heaven, I came across a quote, once again, from the Book of Joy, given to me by my lovely, intelligent, talented wife, Marietta, and the Dalai Lama and Archbishop Tutu are talking about this particular topic, fear of death and whatnot. And at one point, the Archbishop Tutu says, yeah, many people on this planet worry about going to hell, but this is not much use, he says. There is no need to be afraid. And then the Dalai Lama jumps in and says, so, he says, anyway, I would prefer to go to hell rather than heaven. I can help more people there. So if you're really committed to that notion, you can go with the Dalai Lama, and then you don't have to be afraid. there are also personal forms of exile. I think we're probably all familiar with those. Anyone who has suffered from any kind of disease, the brain tumor that that Deb mentioned, some other debilitating disease, the disease or the sickness of a loved one, those of us who have suffered from alcoholism or drug addiction. I mean, any kind of debility like that takes us into the place of exile. We're cut off, right? And so what I mentioned earlier from the recovery community, the way people talk about this is what we were like, what happened, and what it's like now. It is a way of describing being returned from exile and being restored not just to relationship, but restored to partnership with God, with Jesus, with the rest of the human race, and ultimately with creation. I read an article just recently. It's entitled, Why the White Middle Class is Dying Faster, which came as a surprise to me. And these researchers discovered that that white males age 45 to 54 are now dying earlier and quicker than in previous times in our culture right here in the United States, and apparently this is specific to the U.S. And the way they describe it is that they weave a narrative of cumulative disadvantage, particularly among those with low levels of education, and then they go on to describe this. Along with worsening job prospects over the last several decades, this group has seen their chances of a stable marriage and family decline, along with their overall health. To manage their despair about the gap between their hopes and what's come of their lives, they've often turned to drugs, alcohol, and particularly suicide. And the statistics now among white males age 45 to 54 in suicide are pretty staggering in this country today. Meanwhile, gains in fighting heart disease have stalled, and rates of obesity and diabetes have ploddingly climbed. So, the rise in mortality for white midlife people in America, especially men, since the late 1990s, is actually the final stage of a decades-long process. We have a whole segment of our population living in exile who have no hope. The promise for those who have experienced what we were like, what happened, and what it's like now, those of us who have been returned from exile, those of us who have been given our lives back by the grace of God from whatever disease or disconnect we've experienced, can now witness to the presence and the power of God. Go back to Deb's stories about caregivers and that work. I mean, I remember years ago when she first came and asked whether St. Peter's would sponsor a caregiver support group, she shared with us the statistic that some 60% of caregivers die before the person they're caring for, because of the nature of the job, because they become so isolated and so stressed. And it blew our minds, I mean, to the point where none of us was going to argue with a statistic like that. And now we're hearing stories from people that have participated in the caregiver support group who are being returned from that exile, and who are being restored not just to relationship, but into partnership. Those of us who have been given that gift can now witness to the power of the gift for the rest of the world. So, Jewish boy with no bucket. Hey, stinky boy with no clothes. Hey, Samaritan lady with five husbands. Hey, bald priest boy with no brain. You know, on and on. You know, apply whatever. You and I have been invited into a partnership with God. Take a nice deep breath.